This is our second session on the wellness journey, and we're going to talk about choices and changes and challenges today. Some of you were here yesterday, and we did talk about wellness as involving the whole person, that it's not just the physical aspects of wellness, but it's the other dimensions which you see here in the circle that are also very much a part of wellness. We talked about wellness as being something that we do as individuals, but also that we do in relationship to others and in relationship to community and in relationship to our larger environment. We also talked about some how some of our emotional states and feelings of loneliness, boredom, the fears we have, anxieties and depression, how some of these can set the stage for physical disabilities or diseases through lowering the resistance of the body. The psychologist Kenneth Pelletier from California calls these diseases maladaption to psychosocial and environmental stressors. Now, these same feelings of apathy or boredom or depression can also lead to abuse of the body. And we mentioned some of them yesterday. The addictive behaviors of smoking or alcoholism, overeating, the feminist Ann Wilson Schaaf, maybe some of you have read her book on women's reality. She has a recent book out called When Society Becomes an Addict, talks about our whole society as an addictive society. When we give up one addiction, we move on and pick up something else. Now, these kinds of behaviors, when the abusive behaviors that many of us in our society are involved with in some way or another, whether it's ourselves or whether it's members of our family or other people in the community that we know of, we talked about yesterday how they're often substitutes for other more basic human needs, such as caring and affection from other people or recognition from others or from our own acceptance of ourself. So today we want to talk about some of the choices we have, and I'd like to suggest that there are two basic approaches to health care. Number one, the increased sophistication of biomedical technology, which we are witnessing on a practically daily or weekly basis, where we see increases in sophisticated type of surgeries. The coronary bypass has now become practically a household word for many of us. Kidney dialysis, prosthetic joints, heart, and other organ transplants. But this system of biomedical technology, the increase is directly related to the widespread indulgence of our self-destructive behaviors, our lifestyles. And we expect somehow medicine and technology to take care of this for us. We indulge our own desires and needs in the kind of destructive lifestyles, and then expect medicine and technology to repair the damage for us. The second approach I would suggest is the ecological approach, where we begin to recognize the finite resources that we have as individuals. And I think, Bob, you were talking about that yesterday when you said that we all have to die from something at some point. no matter how well we are, at some point we are going to have to die. So recognizing the finite resources that we have as individuals, but also the finite resources within our environment and the planet Earth. So under this ecological model, prevention of the disorders and the diseases requires some changes. Changes in our self-destructive lifestyles, less dependence on high tech, and taking more responsibility as individuals. It requires a change from external emphasis, where we look outside of ourselves for answers, to an internal orientation, beginning to listen to ourselves more, being in touch with our bodies, in touch with the people we live with, in touch with our environment, and began to ask questions and to take some responsibility for some changes. We are not automatons, but we are thinking, feeling, sensing, and relating human beings. We are capable of making choices. And yet, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, how difficult it is to begin to make changes. And I think I see that more and more. I see it in myself, and I see it with, as a counselor working in a counseling center with students. Change is a very difficult thing to do. It's easy to talk about, but it means that we have to make changes not only in our attitudes, but in our practices and the kind of choices we make in our life. So it's a struggle. And it takes a lot of intentionality and a kind of readiness on our part and a lot of conscious effort and acting to begin to make some changes. So I'd like to look at the six dimensions of wellness today with you and talk about how we can begin to make some changes in our lifestyle and in our living, looking at these different aspects. And as we talked about yesterday, this represents the whole person, the life that all of us are leading in. They all interrelate to one another. Whatever happens in one aspect is going to affect what happens in the other. And as you probably know, with the physical, if you start eating more nutritiously, if you start taking care of yourself, exercising, becoming more fit, it's going to make a difference in how you feel about yourself, how you relate to other people. It's going to make a difference in your thinking capacity, how you feel about your job, etc. So these are all part of who we are as individuals. The physical is easiest to talk about. We're all aware of who we are as bodies. I guess I'd like to say something about the physical in terms of we had a diagram on the board yesterday which showed a treatment model and a wellness model. And the treatment model brought us to a neutral point where there was no illness or wellness discernible. The wellness model kept the person going and working towards an awareness of self, educating the self, and growing and changing. Talking about the physical, tell about an older brother of mine who a couple of years ago had a coronary bypass, a quintuple, five. He picked it up on, was noticing some signs of distressed breathing when he was taking walks. So decided to check it out and had a stress test and discovered that he indeed had some problem. The angiogram showed that there was some blockage in the coronary arteries. So he had coronary bypass surgery, and it has changed his whole lifestyle. He said, if I had only known about this, had thought about this earlier, I would have made some changes in my lifestyle earlier. But it took a crisis to bring him to that realization. So instead of coming back to the neutral point of just recovering from the operation and then picking up with his life again, his old lifestyle, what he has done is be very aware of what he eats, the exercise he gets, what is stressful in his life, and has reduced that. So he's really looking at some major changes in his lifestyle that hopefully is going to keep him living longer and at a quality of life that he probably hadn't enjoyed before. His next door neighbor and friend had had the same thing happen to him 6 months earlier. He also had the bypass surgery. But when he got back to that neutral point of recovering from his surgery, he decided he was fine. He wasn't going to bother making any changes, and he didn't. He went back to eating the same way he had before, high-fat diet, didn't do much with exercise, continued his work level that was very stressful. And a year later, he had another heart attack, and he died. There are two different choices there. One person, recognizing the risks, decided to make some lifestyle changes. Another person, recognizing the risks, said, I'm not going to do anything about it. Now, there's neither any right or wrong in this. It's just two different examples of choices that people make. That's in the physical. You probably each have a story related here that you could talk about. What about the other areas? And I guess that's what I would like to do some conversation and sharing with during this session on what has been your experience in any one of these areas of beginning to make some changes that is moving you towards a higher level of health and wellness, a higher level of well-being?
About 13 years ago, I had glomerular nephritis, and according to the literature, I wasn't going to make it. And I found out, it was at the time when plasmapheresis was just coming into its effectiveness, you might say, and that turned things around. They put me through the plasmapheresis twice. I was there 2 weeks at UCLA, and when I came home then and saw my local doctor, he emphasized the fact that I should not be eating a lot of red meat. Well, I've heard that a lot of people don't eat red meat, but I thought it was just because it didn't make them feel as good. But I had never noticed it.
Mm-hmm.
It made any difference to me. But so I have become very conscious of avoiding red meat. Not altogether, but I certainly don't. I certainly eat a lot of fish and fowl, a lot more than I ever did before. And I've kept my creatinine count down by using a better judgment when it comes to eating.
So you've made some intentional changes in response to the
right.
situation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's improved.
I have, my creatinine count has stayed down.
Mm-hmm. Which means your state of health is probably
yeah.
at a better level than it certainly would be without it.
Mm-hmm. Would you explain what she's talking, her what down? I didn't understand.
Creatinine.
What's that? I don't
understand. Do you want to?
Doc, you tell.
It's a blood test that's used to measure kidney function. It's a waste product in the blood that's the most accurate way to measure how efficient your kidneys are working, and the lower it is, the better. So her count being down means her kidneys are working well.
Yes, Thor.
I know you pointed out that one segment on physical, but I can't quite make out what, from sitting back here, I think my glasses are awful dirty.
Okay.
But just read them for me so I know what you got.
Physical.
In the whole pie.
Spiritual.
Spiritual.
Emotional.
Emotional.
Intellectual. Vocational work aspect, and then social and environment.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of going through a change right now, several changes. I was a florist, and now I'm going back to school to become a dental assistant, just for the fact that I was married, and now I'm going through a divorce. And so I'm changing from my social and my emotional. Through going through the divorce, I'm changing my intellectual and vocational by going back to school. And I'm trying to quit smoking, which I've got maybe another week, and I'll cold turkey quit smoking. And that's a big lot of stress to be going through. It change all at once. And it does take time, and it does take determination and diligence. And it's a lot of ups and downs emotionally. You know, some days I feel good, some days I feel really just like sleeping all day. And that's my escape, is I sleep a lot.
So you use that to balance out some of the other...
Yeah, and I talk a lot. I've been up here and I've talked to a lot of people. And that's an unload for me.
Mm-hmm. It's a way of coping and getting rid of some of the anxiety.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
That's a lot of change to be going through at one time.
Yeah, I'm hoping it'll get better. Everybody keeps telling me it takes time, and I wonder how much time does it take. it's a struggle, a daily struggle, and you want some relief, but then that's where the spiritual comes in, trusting in the Lord and taking one day at a time.
So you've made some rather significant decisions in some life changes for
yeah.
yourself.
Quite a few.
And are moving in that direction of...
I'm trying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then have some supports as well.
Mm-hmm.
Any others have some... suggestions or stories about ways that you're discovering in your own life how you've begun to make some changes that, or even awareness of changes you might need to be making? Thor?
Well, I suppose I can relate to in my home area after I retired. I live in northern Minnesota and was involved with a lot of people over the years on in the camp situation and board situation while I was still working, and then moved into the same camp staff jobs that I had, or that I was in a board position and did the staffing or was part of the staff. And then over the years, these 13 years of retirement, I found that I was comfortable. Everybody knew me, and it was easy to, you know, I could just kind of float along and everything. Everybody's supporting, all supportive. But I thought, and this leads to Holden, because I said, well, and I knew about Holden. I said, what is it like if I just get completely out of my comfortable social thing and go someplace where nobody knows me and challenge myself to find new friends, new interests? And I think that's a lead to a wellness thing, because that's what it's done for me. Just that change. We can bog ourselves down into our family groups and our friends that we've known for all these years and be very comfortable, but challenge yourself to go somewhere else and see how you operate. Maybe it won't work for everybody, but it sure worked for me. Mm-hmm.
So a total change of environment and social group, and
yeah, you feel good about yourself. Mm-hmm. You can do that.
Sort of taking time out, and I guess that's what Holden sort of represents for a lot of people, doesn't it?
I think so.
For some shorter or longer periods. Mike, you were smiling.
I've just always thought of that a change in environment is one of the best things. You know, just something that totally nobody knows you. You know, you have to effectually learn to speak a new language with yourself to function, and I think it's a very learning process. You learn a lot about yourself and about your limitations and your qualities, and I think it's a great experience
just to actually step out of.
You're talking about boredom and loneliness and the coalition, the way they kind of go together. That's one of the things that I experience quite often. I have so much time on my hands. I'm not working now, and I get into a loneliness and a boredom. You know, going from being married to single, not of my choice, and that leads to depression. Is there something? You know, my mom says, "Well, you've got to make yourself happy. You have to push yourself to find, you know, get yourself out of that." Is that what you got to do? Make yourself get out of that, or is it okay to be there for a while?
Anybody?
Well, try volunteering in a hospital. Yeah. I've heard that'll do it.
Well, Diane, just what you've done by coming to Holden is a step that way.
Yeah, that's why
I'm sure you feel that very, very much.
That's why I came here.
Yes.
But even here, I still have those.
Oh, sure.
Those things, those times.
Yes, the woman back here.
I can relate to that somewhat. I was employed until May of last year when I retired from my job. And in June, my husband was hospitalized and remained in the hospital until mid-August when he died. So I've had a period where I felt very unneeded. I had been a very busy lady. All my lifestyle was a lot of activity, and suddenly I wasn't needed in my job, it wasn't needed by my husband, and I was determined that I was going to keep as healthy as I could and as active as I could and not spend a lot of time dwelling upon what could have been. I had a lot of beautiful memories, so I became a volunteer. I was involved in 3 hospital activities. A nursing home, just wherever there was a need. Sometimes I almost became frustrated trying to fill up the days. And then other days I was so busy that, you know, there was hardly time. But there was a satisfaction in it. And then I decided I needed something with a little more consistency. And my daughter had worked here a couple summers and was very happy. In fact, my husband and I had been here for a week and had decided when he retired we would come here as volunteers. So here I am. I feel a definite spark has gone from me. Because we were so close, it's like a part of me is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to rekindle that. And with God's help, I will. But it's going to take time. But I've basically been happy. You know, there's a sadness down inside.
Sure.
But, I try to do what he would have wanted me to do and what I want to do.
But I think in both your situations, taking some action, doing something, being aware of the feelings, but doing something that leads you, you're not sure yet.
Yeah, you get in a trap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I cave in that trap quite often.
But you've taken some action coming here,
and
you're not sure, you know, what that may lead to, but you have acted. Mike, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was thinking about action. Even here, you need, it's really important to keep active. I work in Narnia in the mornings, and I found even in the afternoons I have to do something for my own mental health to keep busy. And so I started to work in pottery, you know, just to keep busy, to keep doing something that I can feel good about, and not having a lot of time to stew in my own juice. And that helps a lot, just keeping after, whether it's pottery or active Bible study, or, you know, kite making in the afternoon, or whatever. Keeping busy is really an important thing to keep everything in perspective.
Mm-hmm. I think I found that since I've been here too.
What about that silence that Carol was talking about this morning in her matins at breakfast?
The discipline of solitude.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between solitude and loneliness. Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I think that we tend, I don't know if it's our culture that does this to us, but maybe it isn't. But we tend to get very busy and think that that's where we should be, whereas sometimes we should separate ourselves from this busyness and have some time for reflection and quiet, which doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be lonely. It means that you find some inner strength that helps you get some perspective on what you're doing and listen to God instead of talk to him all the time. And sometimes that gives you some really inspiring new direction. There's a book that's been helping me through this, and that's called The Celebration of Discipline by Foster. And he talks about meditation. It's a Christian approach to meditation and prayer and fasting, the inner disciplines, and then the more outward disciplines that would include some of the social things, vocations,
mm-hmm.
and then the corporate disciplines, which would include church. And it is a real inspiration to work through that.
So moving out of your ordinary place in life, as you talked about, Thor, and also Mike, and coming here is one thing, but then even here one can become sort of busy, 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 and being involved is very good, and we need that. But then taking time out also to have that moment of silence and solitude. I think an important aspect of wellness is trying to maintain some kind of balance. And it doesn't mean that you're always going to be on an equal basis, but not getting too far extreme in either direction, but keeping things in some balance.
I think starting the day and ending the day with reflection is, for me,
for you, that's
thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It may not be for everybody, but I have to, when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I have to do is make myself open to God and let him know that I want to be open to him during the day.
And what's important is that you discover for yourself, and I discover for myself, how to maintain that balance. And what works for me is not necessarily what's going to work for you. Thor.
I'll relate a little story that happened when I came here. I had a ride from Seattle with a very nice person that happened to come to Holden at the same time. And when I first met her, she didn't know who I was, and I didn't know who she was, and she didn't know who was going to ride with her. And still, I found that she was completely stressed, and I felt that all the way while coming here and riding with her. And I just wonder, and I think I said a few times that, well, can't you just kind of shake it off? Well, you know, her world is so busy, and I'm not sure how you can do that. If she were here, maybe she could explain it, but I felt that she was just had too much going, and she's too young to...
Well, isn't it one of the paradoxes, at least I find it so with myself, that at the times when I'm most under stress and most busy are the times when I most need to relax and have some other kind of balancing factor in my life, and yet I don't.
Mm-hmm. Don't have time.
Don't have time to do it, exactly.
You don't even have time to think about what that could be.
Right.
I mean, or energy.
And so many of us, I think, in our lives, we get to that point where life becomes so busy and then so stressful that we get way out of sync, way out of balance with looking at other parts of who we are.
I also joined an over 55 exercise class, which has been excellent. There's a woman that's 80 in it. And it's just amazing. It's very, you know, it's good for people.
Mm-hmm.
We meet three mornings a week for an hour. It's good.
It's good.
It's kind of the wheel.
Sure. Keeping.
Getting a lot of things.
Attending to different aspects of the self. And we can't really, we have to make some choices on when we're going to focus in on which one or which two were. We can't be focusing on all of them at the same time. You had a...
Oh, I was just going to relate this and see if anybody can relate to it. And I think sometimes it's a unique problem. I came from a family of 11. Isn't anybody going to say, oh?
We have a neighbor next door that has 16.
Well, I myself look back now, and I don't know how my mother even stayed sane. You know, I look at it now, and I just can't even envision anybody going through life raising 11 children. But anyway, I guess if I were going to choose being a family of 1 and 11, I would definitely choose the 11. I'm kind of like Thor. I came here alone, and I met someone, I think it was the first day, and they said, are you alone? And they were so surprised that I came all the way from Minnesota alone. Yeah. And I almost wanted to say, well, you know, I'm going to have to die alone, and that's not going to be any fun. But
and you came into this world.
But I was just thinking.
We were 10 to meet her, but.
Yeah, not quite then. But I was just thinking of how enmeshed our family can get so that we over-identify with each other's problems and also with each other's joys, which is good. I've never had children. I'm single, and I can get as excited about my nieces and nephews as their parents almost. So that's a real high for me, and I'm close to them, and I'm important to them. I can see that. But it's such an enmeshed situation that it's just refreshing to get out here where nobody knows me, and I can talk to people if I want to and not if I don't want to. And to make matters worse, my brother's a state representative, and everybody knows him and what he's thinking. He has a platform for his thoughts, and I don't. And here we don't, the rest of us. And it's a mixed blessing. And I guess everybody can say that about their situation.
Well, I think we can get enmeshed in, you know, any one of these areas. With the social, we can become so involved in giving of ourselves to other people that we forget about who we are as individuals.
Well, that has happened too. I live in a situation with two. I belong to some group of sisters, and we live three in a home, and we have two homeless people with us now. That their situations are so pathetic and sad that we find ourselves just getting caught into their situation to the point where we just need breathers every now and then, you know, to stay healthy in that situation. I guess, you know, it's really a real struggle.
Tillich has a wonderful essay called "The Meaning of Help," and he talks about two different elements that are important in life: self-identity. And self-alteration. And the self-identity is very important for each one of us, where we move back into ourselves and examine ourselves, are in touch with ourselves, who we are as an individual, what our beliefs are, what we value, what we find meaning in life. But if we stay there, we can become narcissistic and shriveled and actually sort of die on the vine. We need to go out to relate to other people in order to test out who we are, test out our ideas, talk about our concerns and beliefs so that we alter some of those. But if we stay out here, outside of ourselves, then we don't know who we are as individuals, because we're always being defined by the externals, other people out there. What are they going to say? How is it going to look to them? So somehow keeping a balance between these two, who I am as a self and who I am in relation to other people. Not always an easy thing to do. And we move back and forth, always, I think, in that dynamic, where, as you were saying, you need to take that solitude and come back into the self and reflect and think about who I am and what I'm doing here and how I'm relating to the world around me, and then go back out into the world again.
One of the things that is a kind of a neat little trick, if you can do it, to help yourself do this, I think, and help yourself keep from being busy all through the whole week, is to, our staff director insists that we mark off one day a week, or at least one day every 2 weeks, and we put a big X through it, and we tell everybody who wants us to program ourselves during that day that we're sorry, we're very busy. We have other appointments. We have something else going on. And that is a total day which we're to take for ourselves to get away from the job or to reflect. And it's a very people job, and so you need to do that, or you find that the whole month goes by and you haven't given yourself a break at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it isn't hard once you mark that off and say, oh, no, sorry, I've got an appointment. And that's the appointment with yourself. It's just as important as having an appointment with somebody else or a meeting or something.
I think we need to do that in families, too. We need to do that in relationships with spouses, partners, where I think Vern and I have had to schedule some times so that we preserve a certain time together. Otherwise, the rest of our lives just can encroach on that, and it's giving and going and doing, and there's no time left for the relationship and no time for me as an individual. Mm-hmm. So planning that is an important part of wellness.
I was thinking about a sermon that I heard on Sunday that he was relating about a woman that he had seen a year previously that, you know, was a sharp dresser, looked nice, and was always into so many different activities and was really active. And he saw her sometime later, and she was a total wreck. And it was kind of like, what happened? And it turned out that what happened was she added one more thing to her already busy schedule. And it didn't affect just that one thing, it affected everything. You know, her personal well-being, her looks, and it affected all the things she was in. So it's kind of a good thing to remember, too, that keep in remembrance the balance that that one last thing can put you over, that we have to keep that in mind constantly.
And so many of the choices are not between positives and negatives or good and bad. It's between a lot of good things, that activities I can go to, people to talk with. I mean, here, there are endless conversations one can have. And yet, at some point, I have to say, enough is enough. You know, there's a limit to how much I can spend, how much time I can spend in reaching out and connecting. I can do that to some degree and then have to pull back again. So recognizing your limitations.
I think that, back to the pie for a minute, it also seems like part of the difficulty is choosing, and maybe not just choosing, but also discerning what part of the pie needs to be changed.
Good point.
And mm-hmm. choosing to change your vocation or not choosing to change your vocation at the risk of changing your social and environmental situation in a way that would be not positive. Or maybe saying, I like my vocation, it's not very intellectually stimulating right now, so that it's okay for me right now to have a smaller piece of the pie right in that intellectual part of it. Or whatever it may be. And for each of us, I think that we're each willing to sacrifice a part of that segment more than we're willing to sacrifice other parts of the segment. So that's a little trickiness, I think, in kind of manipulating that pie is being able to discern what needs changing and what doesn't, and what's worth changing and what isn't.
So the discerning of that is somewhat difficult. And then taking the risk of making some change mm-hmm. in one of those areas. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And are you changing, are you making a change, or are you running away? Trying to figure that out as well. Mm-hmm.
And how do you do that?
It's me. I meditate personally.
You find that quiet space where...
That's what I choose.
Where you can begin to sort it out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we never really know fully, so there's always an element of risk.
Yeah, and part of it is accepting either it's going to be okay no matter what, or accepting that this might be a bad idea, but if it turns out to be a bad idea, then I can make that bad into okay. Mm-hmm. Sort of accepting that mystery at the end.
That makes me think of being honest with yourself. I mean, we can go away into a time of silence, and a time with ourself, being reflection, and I can do that fairly easily. You know, I come from a family of one child, and I really did like it, but I learned to be alone. I can do that, but sometimes I catch myself being dishonest with myself. And what I thought of as intellectual and me being a student and just graduating and going through change and all, it's coming true. And I used to, I've always been a kind of overachiever and wanted to get grades and never really too interested in making money, you know, or having a profession that I would make money. But then I started realizing, you know, I was going through a struggle with grades and what school to go to next.
And I've kind of started thinking, it's the same thing as wanting money. What I want is success. I want someone to pat me on the back and say, you're the best at what you do. And I just have a different way of qualifying that value. I don't say it's with money. Or I don't even say it's with success. I say I want to do really well for myself. And I'd let the intellectual overstep its bounds. And until I just really sat down and really made myself be honest with why that was so important. I mean, I knew it was important. I've known that my whole life. But why it was, I couldn't get away from it. That took a big risk. When you talk about risks. And that was scary, and still is, because that's kind of how I function. And I function pretty well. But, so.
Part of that is just trying to reach your potential, I think.
Talk about that a little more to us. What?
Well, everybody is endowed with certain talents and abilities, and I don't think you ever feel really fulfilled in any way, emotionally, especially if you feel that you have not done your best and fulfilled your potential in at least a few areas. And I know we were almost filled with guilt as we were growing up, being urged to reach our potential. We were wondering, what did God give us that we must be using now that we're not using the way we should?
Others agree with that or have any? Yes?
Well, I was just going to say that I think Garrison Keillor calls that the Midwestern idea of don't think that you're too special or something. And I think I grew up in a family where that was definitely, you know, something that was not necessarily stressed, you know, overtly, but it was kind of a, you know, well, don't think that you're too special, you know.
Ellen Goodman had a wonderful column on that, talking about looking at yourself every morning in the mirror and asking, you know, saying, you're not such a special person. You're just lucky that someone out there really is interested in you. And sort of having a conversation with yourself. Not inflating oneself too much.
I think there's an opposite side to that too, where you have to say you are a special person. There are a lot of people with extremely low self-esteem that need to look at themselves in the mirror in the morning and say, wow, you really are a special person. You're not a lump of nothing. So it goes either way, I guess.
That, I think you're right on in terms of the self-esteem issue. And self-esteem comes not from over-inflating or under-inflating.
Right.
Again, it's a kind of balance. But it probably is one of the biggest issues that I work with in dealing with college students that come to see me in the counseling center is the self-esteem issue. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably the bottom line for wellness too, is what I think about myself. Mm-hmm. And connected with that, what you talked about, Doris, I am a creature created by God in God's image. What does that mean? You know, I am a unique person then. I have unique possibilities. So to discover what they are, and it's a process of discovering. It's not something that I'm going to discover and then that's it, and I know for the rest of my life. It's a constant unfolding process of becoming who I am as a person. So fulfilling your potential, discovering what that is a continual process.
And it's not just easy either. I think it's really a struggle, I think. You know, you don't just discover things and say, oh, you know, you have to look at things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for me anyway, it's a constant up and down, you know, oh, okay, today I'm okay, and tomorrow I'm, you know, and so-so, and the next day I'm, you know, and it just goes like this.
But I think we need to turn those, I mean, what I hear is a lot of anxiety about discovering who we are, and I think that what we need to do is turn that into some excitement and think, you know, this is who I am today, but I'm kind of excited to see who I'm going to be when I'm 50. And I'm even more excited to see who I'm going to be when I'm 80. And that feels really exciting to think that I might have a gift and a talent today, but I might be really tired of that in 10 years. And it's exciting to think about what might take its place then.
Or that gift or talent may take a different form.
Right.
Maybe merging into a larger gift or talent. That, A wonderful book, and I think I've already told Andrea about this book. I don't know whether some of you have read it or not. Is called The Measure of My Days by Florida Scott Maxwell. They have it in the bookstore. It's just a little volume. She was 80 years old when she wrote the book, but it's a book that can be enjoyed by any age. It helps to understand the aging process, which we are all part of. We are, every minute, every day, we are born anew and dying at the same time. But it also, this woman in her 80s, who raised a family, at age 50 she became a Jungian analyst and had a practice for several years, looks back at age 80 over her life, and sort of, as she talks about, reassembles the pieces of her life together. And it's just gems of wisdom that I would recommend to any one of you. And the excitement that she experiences, which Andrew talked about, she talked about at age 70, she thought life was quieting down and it was going to continue that way until her death. And she was accepting that as just part of the aging process. And then she talks about at age 80, suddenly she had this burst of new vitality and energy and interest in the world around her. And it surprised her. And there she was. And here she did her writing, some of her writing when she was age 80. So being open to the surprises and the changes and taking some risks leads to some of that.
I need to know the name of that book. I'm pushing 80 myself.
The Measure of My Days.
The Measure what?
The Measure of My Days.
Who was the author, please?
Florida Scott Maxwell. Mike.
It's funny. The excitement can come, you know, wherever you choose to look for it. It's just choosing to look for it. Because I was walking in the woods the other day and I looked up at a pine tree and just one of the branches and all the green pine needles. And I looked up the tree and it was just huge, tall, giant pine. And you think how many of those little, slim, narrow green things there were. And like, I don't know, it was just, I'm not a biologist or an ecologist in my studies, but I was just amazed at all on the one tree. And then you look that way and you see the mountain just covered with these trees and just the immensity and just, I don't know, it was exciting. There was an excitement in that at that time for some strange quirk of reason, but just being receptive to that, you know, picks life up a little bit.
I think we could call that excitement joy, especially as Christians. We don't seem to talk about joy as much as it is found in the Bible too, and that's some excitement or joy, it's different than happiness. And it's a different, I don't know if I can really say anything about it. You can't describe it. But if we would maybe take and let joy in more often, like you let, I would call that joy, and you let that in. And that could go with you for a long time. Or if you were joyful in your heart, you would see more of those instances. And if that were, I was just thinking goal, we're so goal-oriented and nowadays, or always have been. If that would be one of our goals, that would be nice. Helpful, maybe. For me, it is.
So experiencing joy for you is being open then to
the possibilities. I was just thinking of values when you're talking about self-fulfilling. Mm-hmm. I can resonate to that really good. You know, I got to fulfill all my potential. But it's still what you value as potential to fulfill, you know. And if trying to make that, and I think it is one of my values, to experience joy.
I think you can't figure out your potential. You have to live it out. I know I've done things in my later years that I didn't dream possible when I was younger. Didn't even enter my head. Those things kind of unfold as you age.
So when you look back at all the zigs and zags in the road.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have predicted some of that.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But there's a kind of unfolding.
Yeah, doors open when you least expect them to.
Also, can't you do, again, the attitude of you can do most anything you set your mind to do? If you really think it out and you set a goal and that you can really accomplish it.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think
really
you have to have the ability, the innate ability and intelligence. You can't overreach your own ability.
But what's one person's ability is not another.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think you need, this model just bothers me a titch, because the spiritual gets the same equal amount from the pie. Don't you think that connectedness to God is the most important thing that will help us order all of these others and help us find our potential? I mean, and is it our potential we want, or is it what God what God wants us to be? It seems to me that we need connecting to our spiritual side most of all, and as we do that, and as we become closer to God, our potential and the other things that you've got listed there, which may affect what we do, will come clear to us.
There's another model that could be used with the iceberg model, where at the top, just the tip of the iceberg is one state of health. Below that would be a level of lifestyle behaviors, the kinds of activities we're involved with, what we eat, how we what we do with our life, how we relate to other people. The next level would be the psychological payoffs that we get for what we do in this lifestyle level. And the one below, which is probably the most important and most influential in what happens above that, is the spiritual or the metaphysical, the something beyond ourselves. And I guess that would be a way of what you're saying, that at base, that's determines probably a lot of what how we act and how we think about things. And our time is just about up for today. I'd like to leave you with a couple quotes today. Tomorrow we have one more session, and it's entitled "For the Fun of It," and we're going to do some looking at laughter and at play and relaxation, ways of coping, of choices we can make to keep ourselves in balance. A quote from Henry Bergson, who says, "To exist is to change, to change is to mature, and to mature is to create oneself endlessly." And then Bob Dylan, who says, "He not busy being born is busy dying." Mm-hmm. So happy aborning, re-aborning. Stay well.
Thank you.